I'm delighted now to welcome back to the show Jan Willem Janssens, who is the executive director of Earthworks Institute, and Keena Murphy, who is conservation and stewardship director of Earthworks Institute. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, Mary Charlotte.
Hi, Mary Charlotte.
It's so good to have you. We've talked over the years a number of times on this program about what you do, but I thought it'd be a nice day to really talk about the big picture of what Earthworks Institute has done. It started around 1994 with a permaculture school.
That's right. Yeah, I would say Santa Fe was blessed with a person that had moved just here in the community, Leslie Barkley, who came from the East Coast and had a long history in land conservation. She was one of the co-founders of the predecessor of Friends of the Earth, and was active in the National Land Trust movement. She also founded a conservancy, the Dutchess County Land Conservancy in upstate New York, and then came to Santa Fe, where she bought a beautiful property. But she soon discovered that that land needed a lot of love, tenderness, and care, and that there was not a lot of knowledge around here on how to do that. And the knowledge that was around said, okay, do everything a little less. But she soon felt like, you know, no, this land needs a lot more.
Meaning what? Restoration? It was damaged?
That's right. It was heavily overgrazed. It was eroding. There were ongoing floods in the Galisteo Creek because it was property with 2 miles of frontage on the Galisteo Creek. And the grass didn't want to grow. So what do you do then? And so she felt like, well, we first need to think how people could live here. So, and that starts with the buildings. That starts with how people move across the landscape, paths and roads, capturing the water where it falls, making that water help plants to grow so that the roots grow the soil back. And just thinking about those things and studying with people like Ben Haggard, who was already very active in permaculture in those days here in town, and Joel Glansberg, and also people like Bill DeBuys and Michael Ogden, who was really in restored wetlands, constructed wetlands. She gathered a group of people like those who became early advisors for Earthworks Institute, and the word permaculture was dropped. And she really got onto that and felt like, ah, that's what I want. And she also met Fizz Harwood, who was then, I think, not yet in Santa Fe, but also they were friends, and who also had an idea of a permaculture school that later became Ecoversity.
Right.
So there was this gestation of permaculture in the early 90s here in Santa Fe.
Now, what does permaculture actually mean? It's one of those words that you hear every third day or more often. What is it?
Okay, permaculture is a philosophy of land use that was introduced by Bill Mollison in the late 70s, early 80s, I believe, in Australia and Tasmania, where he looked at how different communities around the world have land use relationships, or land relationships that make them successful in enduring their stay on the land while making the land more productive. And one of those techniques is, for instance, that you have permanent crops that are layered on top of each other that then allow different crops in different seasons and ecological relationships at different stages, three-dimensionally, on the landscape, from the higher canopy, the lower canopy, on the ground and in the roots, that then basically build soil, build more vegetation, build a microclimate that more things can grow than you can ever believe if you just see the land.
So if you think about a cornfield planted in perfect rows and then a carrot field with perfect rows of carrots, this is not that.
It's exactly the opposite, yeah.
So you've got all these things growing in among each other, and some are providing shade for the lower ones, things like that.
That's right, yeah. So they're all beneficial to each other, and it is a whole systems approach to growing.
So that it also extends beyond just crop growing, permaculture as a concept.
Oh, absolutely, because it's tied into the living and habitat of humans. So it requires human presence. So for the maintenance and the use of whatever comes out of the land, of course. So therefore, it's connected to how you build a home, how that home is actually grown out of the land, that you use local materials for that, that it is sited accordingly, so that you use natural energy. That water is being harvested and guided back onto the land for the irrigation of your crops and so on.
And so these are things that many people in New Mexico are learning or trying to learn, and that seem like big, huge concepts. Of course, if you started a school, then kids are learning this stuff at an early age, and it becomes second nature to them.
Exactly. So from very early on, Earthworks Institute reached out to local schools to bring these ideas of permaculture to the schools and bring the schools out to the demonstration ranch that Earthworks used to have along the Galisteo Creek that was the Barclay and Earthworks Ranch. Yeah.
So then there was and is the Galisteo Watershed Restoration Project.
Ah, well, after the permaculture phase of Earthworks, the Earthworks team realized that they needed to evaluate what they were doing and how successful they were. So in 1996-97, they invited people from the entire conservation community, including Los Alamos National Laboratories, to come and look at what they were doing at the Earthworks Ranch, and how certain persistent problems of flooding and erosion could be tackled. And also UNM students participated in that and gave some clues about how to look at the wider landscape and how the bigger landscape influences what happens at the ranch and vice versa. So the concept grew that the ranch needed to look more at a watershed scale, because at a watershed scale, issues of how water flows, how wildlife migrates, how soil is being built, can be addressed. And out of that grew the idea of embedding the ideas of permaculture in a watershed concept. And the other component of that was really that Earthworks was initially really in need of reaching the communities. And by embracing a watershed approach, it was more able to look at these permaculture techniques in terms of the needs of the surrounding communities and residents. Which, if the activities just continued at the Earthworks Ranch, it would be too selfish. So it was important to get the information out, and a watershed scale approach really helped with that.
And of course, it's important for everybody living in a natural landscape to understand what a watershed is, where their water comes from.
Absolutely. And just right in the center of the Galisteo Basin, it was a major problem. Like, until probably today, even despite the rain we've had, there are households that have limited water, and where they know that the well may go dry if we have a dry summer, for instance, even this year.
So how do you go about restoring a watershed, both in terms of what needs to be done, but also getting people on board and the many different people who are necessary to help actually do something like that?
Well, we started actually in 98 by having community meetings, by just going to the different communities and asking, what do you like about this landscape? Why do you live here? How is your relationship to the land? And what do you grow? Why are you here despite all the difficulties of erosion, water shortages, long ways driving to town? And we got a sense of why people were there and could gradually appreciate what issues they had that Earthworks could maybe respond to. And we had initially these big top-down ideas of academic ideas. You need to start at the top of the watershed and work your way down. But we felt like, no, we need to go with the flow, where there is a need, where you can mobilize a demonstration project and get a group of people enthusiastic in a way of restoring the land and how they connect then later through that restored land to other projects in the landscape.
And so what happened next?
Well, we created several restoration communities, you could say, in Cañoncito, which is just east of the El Dorado Wilderness, in the village of Galisteo, and along County Road 55A, which is a stretch of county road extending 5 to 7 miles east of Cerrillos. And later that was expanded to include the communities of San Marcos and the communities of Cañada Los Alamos, Valencia, Glorieta, later El Dorado as a larger community. So we've gradually touched upon many of the settled communities in the Galisteo watershed, and later also some of the ranches.
But so then you have all these community meetings and you talk to people and all this. What is the actual work of restoring a watershed so that there is sufficient water for everybody, both the animals and the plants and the humans living there.
Ooh, that is a huge task. That, and for us, that meant, first of all, making the water infiltrate where it falls, and with that, restoring the soil and growing plants and working with small areas where you show how it can gradually expand from there. And that is basically what our logo was, creating concentric circles of expanding ripples through the community.
So the water infiltrating where it falls, why hasn't it done that in the past? I mean, paved over or overgrazed or...
Well, yeah, the land has been severely overgrazed. There are no, you know, there aren't as many native wildlife species on the land as there were before. So, sort of general ecosystem resiliency goes down. Then the land is less able to hold nutrients. It's less able to grow grass, and then it's less able to hold soil. And then you get massive erosion, you get down cuts and head cutting, which then lowers...
What's down cuts and head cutting?
Well, it's when you're looking at a river, and instead of the river being kind of like, on the same level as, you know, the ground where you walk, it's pretty deeply cut down into a canyon or something like that. So that would be like down cutting. And so what happens with that is as the river down cuts, so the water table falls as well. So all the plants are not getting water the way that they used to. And so a lot of what we do is we build structures that help to cause aggradation, which brings that aggradation brings the sediment back, basically. And so instead of degrading, it's aggrading. It's coming back up. So, and so is the water table.
So, in other words, when there's more sediment in the river, the actual level of the river rises.
Well, yeah. I mean, basically. So, I mean, sometimes sediment can clog drainages and things like that, and it's not good. But, like in the case of the Galisteo, actually sedimentation is good. It's the thing that keeps the river from actually downcutting and going deeper and deeper into the earth, as I was explaining before. So... So it keeps the water on the surface, basically, or it helps to.
What is the role of native animal species in keeping watersheds viable?
Well, I think, you know, that's the sort of basic premise of it's why everybody is promoting biodiversity, is that the more biodiversity that there is, the more ecosystem resilience there is. And, you know, every... One thing that large ungulates do is add nutrients to our environment. I mean, so do a whole host of other small mammals. They just add.
What are some examples of large ungulates?
Oh, I'm sorry, are you an ecologist? That would be like large hoofed animals like deer and elk. Yeah. So, but really, all of our large mammals add tremendous amounts of nutrients into our environment, which helps the grass grow. Ungulates are grazers, you know, eat grass, and they stimulate the regrowth of grass, actually.
If it's not overgrazed.
Yeah, yeah. So it's all about striking that balance. And actually, our native species are what help us to strike that balance. If you just sort of throw a bunch of cows or goats or something out there on the land, they're not adapted to this environment. They maybe eat everything down to nothing, which is, you know... unlike some of the other native species that are just more beneficial to the environment in general.
I think it's such an important point to make that when you're looking at a watershed, that biodiversity is part of it, and the reason people are fighting so hard for a diversity of animal species and for protection of endangered species and so on is not just because they have a right to life or because they're cute mm-hmm. or whatever, but because they're part of a system which we are also part of that keeps us alive.
Yeah, which we depend on, and we absolutely can't survive without it. You know, I mean, even something as simple as, you know, a bunch of birds hanging out in a meadow or eating seeds, they're spreading those seeds, they're planting them, you know, throughout a large range. You know, trees growing by rivers, you know, in a riparian area are filtering sediment, making sure that our rivers and lakes don't just fill up with sediment so that the water is actually usable to us. Wetlands actually hold water in place and recharge our groundwater, you know, just things like that. And one of the big things we do is we do a lot of wetland restoration. And wetlands are tremendously important in environments like this, in arid environments like this, because because they do recharge groundwater and they do filter the water, the little bit of water that is there. And so, like, a lot of people are complaining about beavers. Well, beavers create wetlands and they create ponds and they hold the water back. A lot of people think, oh, well, beavers are stealing my water for farming and this and that. But really what is happening is they're making sure that your well water gets recharged every year, you know, because they're recharging the groundwater that you use. So
when, for example, Jan Willem, when a situation like that comes up, people say, beavers are taking my water. How do you make them understand? How do you do that process of education where the population on that land understands the importance of that species or some particular species?
Yeah, we go back to the goal of why people even live there, to figure out what it is that people want from living there and what the values and amenities are that then maybe the landscape can provide. So then they need to balance out what they need to artificially bring in and what maybe nature can provide. And then gradually in the last 10 years, not so much us, but worldwide or in this country, more and more data has been collected to actually value in a dollar amount what the, you could say, ecological service in terms of dollars provides to living in a certain place in terms of water purification, flood control, water availability, the strength of the landscape so that you don't have to do erosion mitigation all the time.
Now, these are things that are called, and I think we discussed this term the last time that you two were here, ecosystem services. I think that's a term that hasn't quite made it into the everybody's general vocabulary, but basically, you know, the city provides sewage services. So does the ecosystem without our paying for it. All we have to do is protect it, basically.
Right. And actually here in Santa Fe, we have one of the first, maybe the first ecosystem, very simple ecosystem services project right here in our backyard. And that is the upper watershed, where the city and the Forest Service have come to an agreement on how that upper watershed needs to be managed so that it doesn't burn up, that the chances for fire are limited, and that it absorbs that water in an optimal way so that that flows into the reservoirs that provides drinking water to Santa Fe so that we're not as dependent on wells in the Rio Grande.
We're talking to Jan Willem Janssens and Keena Murphy from Earthworks Institute, which is located right here in Santa Fe. So let's talk about some of the projects that you're doing now. Everything you're doing now is connected to the type of concepts that we've been talking about.
Let's see, we have so many projects, it's hard to know where to start. But we have a series of river ecosystem restoration initiatives that we're working on, and that funding comes from the New Mexico Environment Department. And basically, we're working on a series of river restoration projects from all the way from Embudo, which is Dixon area, to the Galisteo watershed. And those, what we do with those projects is we come up with a design that basically to restore a part of the river, and knowing that, you know, that's not going to solve the problem, what we do is we then engage the community that lives around there and try to create community stewardship groups. And so we ask the community to come out, help us do restoration, do plantings, remove invasive species, do cleanup. We do a series of educational days. Education is usually surrounded around the monitoring that we do, where people get to know all of the different native species. And then we have workshops. We actually have restoration workshops, one of which we're doing June 19th in El Dorado with Craig Sponholt. So we're going to have a restoration workshop there as well. So we do a series of those events around our restoration projects. We have a series of wetland restoration projects that we're doing as well, and that's through a contract with NMED, and it's funded through the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency. Yeah, I can't get that. And so those are going on also in the Galisteo Basin and in Santa Fe County in the sort of upper part of the Santa Fe watershed.
And all of these things are things that our listeners, wherever they might be in Santa Fe or Albuquerque or Taos or anywhere around here, can become part of if they want to.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about wildlife corridors, which is not a a wolf walking down the hall.
No, it's not. And this is really what gets everyone excited. Well, there's been a growing movement in the United States to basically create wildlife corridors because, as we know, you know, wildlife don't exist in sort of a box in just one limited little area. They need to migrate and move around
right.
and travel.
Unlike us, they don't move into a house and stay there.
Right, exactly.
They spend their summers in one place and their winters in another place.
Yeah, to a large degree. And a lot of animals are following their prey that are migrating and things like that. So we are working with, we're one of the founding members of a group called New Mexico Wildways, which is also a partner organization of the Wildlands Network, which is also part of the spine of the continent. And so this is a big international movement, basically, that New Mexico Wildways is tying into. And what we want to do, what we're working on in the Galisteo Basin, is basically creating a whole wildlife initiative for the Galisteo Basin, where we will work on policy issues, trying to just open up corridors, making sure certain kinds of development doesn't happen within corridors. It also has to do with doing a lot of science, you know, just monitoring wildlife movement and assemblage patterns, because there's a huge gap in people's knowledge about how wildlife actually move and why they assemble the way that they do, and how community ecology actually works between different species. And then there's a mapping initiative that goes along with that. But along with all of our projects, we have a wildlife component that we work on. So as we do like vegetation monitoring, trying to see if our restoration is actually working, we're also implementing a wildlife monitoring program as well to just see what species are there, what habitats there, what they need, what's lacking, things like that. And then also, you know, to tie that back into ecosystem services, I'm working on a study that will really start to look at how basically large ungulates, those hoofed mammals,
our deer and yeah, mooses and elks and all those
exactly,
things.
Yeah, are affecting net primary production, meaning like the growth of plants within corridors that they're using, and then ultimately carbon sequestration. So as we're more and more concerned with global warming, it becomes really important for us to really figure out, okay, well, if we don't have our deer populations, we don't have our elk populations, are we really causing a detriment to our, you know, ourselves and creating more global warming and things like that? Are they, you know, because are they adding a lot of nutrients to the environment and then causing more plants to grow, which are sequestering more carbon, you know, and making our general environment less hot? It's a simple way of putting it, yeah.
We're talking about the Earthworks Institute's many projects. Jan Willem Janssens, you have for a long time understood the importance of doing grassroots work, in other words, really engaging the community as opposed to trying to get some government fix for things.
Yeah, I came here actually with a history of work in Africa, and when I saw the New Mexican landscape, I realized that we need to have a collaborative, multi-party approach to making the landscape more productive and healthy for everybody who's living here and going to live here. And I came at the heydays when there was a lot of people moving into New Mexico, and I think in the time that I've been here for the last 17 years, the population has grown with 400,000 or 500,000 or more. So, and I'm one of those.
Yeah.
So it is... It became clear to me that it was very important to look at how you can leverage people's knowledge, people's resources to take care of the land, because government agencies typically don't have a lot of money for ongoing stewardship and care. And as land is a living creature, like an animal, like ourselves, it needs ongoing care. And I thought back about farming. In Europe, a lot of the natural, where I'm from, a lot of the natural pockets that are still there, like hedgerows or even wetlands, are there as a result of, say, hunting or certain forms of farming or certain forms of peat digging. And as a result of these very functional economic livelihood activities, nature gradually developed, you could say. And I think that and gradually people respected that, and they started to realize that you can increase biodiversity by manipulating the land in a certain way. That it's very clear in Africa too, and Kina can testify to that too, I'm sure, that there is a way of interacting with nature that is both good for the local economy and people's livelihoods and for the long-term stability of the land that nurtures the communities. But you have to start to understand what that relationship is. And I knew just a little bit about it, and I knew that if you start reading engaging people, that you can collectively learn a lot and build bridges between somewhat sterile government programs that help do these things without really understanding what the full mechanisms are on the ground to do it. And so by bringing a lot of people together in these community groups, later community stewardship teams, later in larger groups like the Galisteo Watershed Partnership or now the New Mexico Wildways, we're trying to explore what that means and trying to grow learning communities that engage with the land. And anywhere from schools, we start with that in the schools all the way to the community stewardship teams.
I think like the sort of new message here is really, I think what conservation professionals have done in the past is sort of assume that nobody knows anything about the land or wildlife. Yeah. And I really think that the difference here is, and what we're trying to do is to really provide a space for people to talk about, to share their knowledge of wildlife and the ecosystem and how they've lived in it and what works for them. And so if we all come together and we share our knowledge, then we'll come up with a good answer. We'll come up with a better answer. Because I really feel that, we're all, I mean, you know, there may be some people that have grown up in cities and are really disconnected from nature, but, you know, kind of in Santa Fe and places like this, people are very connected to nature, and it's really important to listen to them and to figure out what they know and to incorporate that knowledge into what we do.
Kina Murphy and Jan Willem Janssens are with Earthworks Institute. They can be found on the web at earthworksinstitute.org. And the telephone number is
982-9806.
Thank you so much for being with us. And you can call Earthworks or you can look at their website to find out how to get involved in the many great activities that are going on over there. It's great to have you on the radio.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.